Hello, everyone, and welcome to City Awesome. I'm Matteo Bonetti, joined, as always, by Mina Rizzucchi and Nikki Bandini. And on this week's episode, we will review everything that happened over the weekend in Serie A, the fight for the final Champions League places, Inter being able to potentially wrap up the Scudetto this coming weekend. We'll look at Cristiano Ronaldo and the Juve situation in depth. Will there be a manager change? And go over some transfer rumors, as well as check out the salvation battle, which is pretty hot right now with three teams currently tied on 31 points. But let's start out with possibly the biggest topic, and that is the situation right now going on between Juventus and Milan, both in a poor run of form. Two more disappointing performances from both the Rossoneri and the Bianconeri over the weekend. Juventus drew 1-1 to Fiorentina, while Milan were obliterated 3-0 by Lazio, and it is now their second consecutive loss. But it seems like Cristiano Ronaldo is once again in the spotlight. He hit out on Instagram after the match, saying that success happens when your dreams are bigger than excuses. And it seems like he's going to be leaving if they finish outside the top four. And I feel like there's so much to unpack here if that actually happens to Juventus. It almost feels like this would be one of the biggest failures from a team that I can remember seeing since I started watching football.
If Juventus do miss out on the top four with Ronaldo, then it's going to be a story that is edged into the club history, that this period of nine titles came to an end with one of the greatest footballers ever to be brought on the roster. That's just how it is. You can't avoid that. And it is pretty damning that you have that player who is still performing to a high level. I think there's certainly been some criticism of his performances in recent weeks, and that's not missed, but he still scored 25 goals this season. And to miss out on the Champions League with Serie A's top scorer doing his bit, it's a terrible look. And as you said, we don't have anything explicit from the club or from Ronaldo, but it's nigh on impossible to me to imagine Ronaldo staying at Juventus to play in the Europa League. It would be a catastrophe for both parties, frankly, because Ronaldo would be, he's going to turn 37 next season. That's a lost year of playing in the competition he wants to play in. And for Juventus, his wages are so onerous that carrying that for another season in the Europa League would be ridiculous. I can't see that scenario. I don't know that I believe he'll be there next season now, even if they're in the Champions League, honestly. The club has always said, we're not selling him, that's not our intention. But I just think the mood is so sour right now. Ronaldo is certainly not hiding his emotions on the pitch. And look, I think that picture is more complicated than we could sell it as. We were just talking before this started. Mina was bringing it up. Like, everyone is so tired right now. Every footballer that you are watching playing in these top leagues has played basically two back-to-back seasons and is exhausted. And maybe with sort of an opportunity to take some distance, they'll feel differently. Although, of course, with the Euros coming right up, they're not going to get much room to sort of stop and breathe after this finishes. So I can easily imagine a scenario where he doesn't stay, even if they're in the top four. But if they're out of the top four, it's almost impossible for me to believe he'll still be there. I think if they are in, it's going to depend on what the decisions are made higher up than that. Is Pirlo still the manager? I think if Pirlo is, that's a hurdle at this point, frankly. I think if you want Ronaldo to be there next season, you need to convince him that the project is immediate as well as good, that it's something that he can win with right now. And that's going to depend a lot on who's in charge.
Yeah, I think you make some great points there, because firstly, like, has he won the Europa League? Wouldn't he want to win that? No, I'm joking. obviously, if I'm Ronaldo, I'm out of there.
Yeah, Messi hasn't won the Europa League.
Yeah, exactly. That's something that he can say. And he can say, I did take them and I took them to the final. We won it. I mean, it's not the Champions League, but we won another final, you know.
Okay, but imagine they went out in the last 16.
And by the way, would you put it past them with Pirlo in charge? Okay, so I think this is my takeaway. Like, I've really defended the fact that I blame the club and not Andrea Pirlo. Having said all of these things in my defense of the coach, I think that if I'm Ronaldo right now, and considering the choices that Pirlo has been making recently, especially in this last match against Fiorentina, it's almost like I'll be honest with you, I'm a novice, I'm a journalist, and I'm sitting down thinking, are you crazy? Like, what is this team? Like, what have you presented Fiorentina with? And if you guys remember with Fiorentina, that Cuadrado was sent off and he didn't make the right substitutions, and you thought he's new, this is like, what, his 13th game, you know? But now I'm thinking to myself, like, this is just ridiculous. Like, you have three centre backs, you know, you have nobody carrying the ball forward. You have no one to fill the box at this stage. Dybala is always, you know, tracking back. And I don't know what Juventus has this obsession with buying forwards that love to track back, but to the extent where I'm not sure they're forwards anymore. Mandzukic was our best left back at the time. Dybala goes back all the way. You know, I mean, what's going on? Who's filling the box here? And you know, there was nobody there. It's like, how could you not have started with Morata or a Raider or McKennie, Weston McKennie, somebody that will go in, you know? It was just stupid. I'm sorry, but it was stupid choices. And it was very difficult for me to sit there and be like, yeah, and, you know, it's wrong for management to choose Andrea Pirlo. I'm thinking, come on, I'm sitting on a couch here and I think I feel like I could have done a better job of it. So I don't know what's going on. And frankly speaking, if Pirlo's in charge, I don't want to be watching Juventus, let alone Ronaldo wanting to play for this team, you know? So I think that, look, all clubs, Inter will sit down and want to see whether they can continue with Antonio Conte, whether he's happy to do so, whether, you know, they're happy to do so. I'm sure they'll be thrilled to do so. You know, I think that a lot of teams will be sitting down with their coaches, you know, with their staff, trying to figure out how they can cope, you know, COVID times, how much money they have to spend on the team purely at Milan. And I think Juventus will do the same. You can talk to me as much as you like about Pirlo staying and this project that they're trying to create, but I'm really sorry the guy's out. You know, like, it's just so clear. The question is who will replace him? You know, will there be a revolution? Will there be, you know, Allegri coming back? Or will there be a new choice? So, and I also would like to know who in management will keep their position in management, considering the disaster that is the imbalance of the squad. So if I'm Ronaldo, I'm not going to make anything now. I'm going to concentrate on the Euros, and then I can decide, because I am Cristiano Ronaldo. I know I'll have offers. I might not get 30 million in wages, but there are other benefits to staying with Juventus, especially if they sell him a good project, if they've managed to keep top four. But I can afford to wait until June before I make a decision.
But what could the project be? We know the finances of Juventus. They were one of the ringleaders for the Super League under Andrea Agnelli, who made it seem like this is the only way that clubs like Juventus can survive, especially after COVID. So it's not like they even have the financial means right now to go out in the summer and completely revolutionize and say, we're bringing that guy who's ready, that guy who's ready. They have so much dead weight right now on the current team of players that are making far too much money, that have far too little of an impact. And most of those players are ones in the midfield, Rabiot and Ramsey, and players on the bench, and even Dybala, who, okay, he had injury problems, he is someone who is making a lot of money, who isn't scoring goals, who isn't having an impact. It seems like the magic sprinkle dust that was around Alvaro Morata in the first half of the season is gone, and now we've all realized that for a team that has the ambitions of Juventus, Alvaro Morata is not good enough of a number nine. He's fine as a rotational player, as a squad player, great.
He's the guy who got the leveler.
But he's not... Think of the striker that Ronaldo succeeded with, Karim Benzema, world-class striker. Morata's nowhere near that. If you want to give Ronaldo the right pieces, we keep talking about the midfield, but it's really the striker that was the ultimate facilitator for Ronaldo at Real Madrid, and that was Benzema, the ideal striker. And I'm not saying that Edin Dzeko is on the level of Benzema, but Dzeko has a little bit more of the kind of things that Benzema could do with his back-to-goal, the touch as well, the passing of Edin Dzeko, his style is much more of someone who would work with Cristiano Ronaldo, which is why Dzeko was plan A last summer. But it all fell through because Arkadiusz Milik didn't move from Napoli to Roma, and Roma couldn't free themselves of Edin Dzeko. So that kind of was the dominoes falling, where ultimately Morata came in and he did fine in the first half of the season, but he's not consistent enough to be that guy that Juventus can rely upon every single weekend. Paulo Dybala hasn't put together a full season now in how long? When was the last time that we saw Paulo Dybala from beginning to end put together a season that is worthy of the talent that we know he has, because we have watched him enough? So, you know, we talk about top four. Is Cristiano Ronaldo going to stay if they don't finish top four? Even if they finish top four, what is exactly going to change that would entice someone who knows that he's at the tail end of his prime, who knows that he only has maybe one or two more seasons where he can genuinely go and get another Champions League tied to his resume? what is Juventus going to do this summer that is actually going to convince him, hey, we actually have a chance?
Here's the thing. I actually think Juventus were at their best when they didn't have money. I think money ruined them because it was the death of their innovation. What they've always been a team that has always succeeded at is creating champions, not necessarily buying the finished product. That was something that was reserved for, you know, clubs with bigger revenues. So I think that, you know, at the time when we looked at that beautiful midfield, it was Pirlo arriving for free. It was, you know, Arturo Vidal arriving for 10 million. Marquisio was a product of the academy. Pogba arrived as a child that nobody cared about in Manchester United, you know. And
they cared, and, but well, it was a bargain.
It was a bargain. I mean, you know, there was a lot of backhanded, I'm sure, money that went to Mino Raiola. But either way, perhaps, you know, it's a little bit like Antonio Conte. Perhaps the best things sometimes are the ones when you can't spend the money and you figure out ways to tactically innovate. And I think that what happened is when they did have a lot of money, it just started becoming a little bit silly. And I don't think the right investments were made. But it is about having that eye to look at who is available in the market, to make reasonable judgments or swap deals that don't necessarily involve buying players who are probably going to be injured for a really long time in instead of Pjanic, you know, that type of thing. And looking, there is a great market out there. And I think everyone at the moment is suffering from this pandemic. And even if you look at the big sides, PSG is suffering in their league. They're doing very well in the Champions League, but they're not dominating like they usually do. Liverpool might not make top four. You know, I think this has been a really bad season for some big clubs. Manchester City had their worst start to the season. They've caught up, but because, you know, they didn't have the season last year where they had to give everything as well. So they had some sort of energy. And I just feel like Milan, it's like Nicky was saying, we're just exhausted. So I think that prices are going to go down. I think that there is room to tactically innovate. And I think that if you are going to do that, you do need somebody who knows how to rebuild. There is a good academy at Juventus. There is players that you can promote and really look to and involve a lot of swap deals. I mean, at the end of the day, Rabiot and Ramsey, I'm sure there is some sort of market out there for them. There's got to be, like, you know, some idiot who's going to be willing to pay a lot of money for them, you know? So maybe not everyone, but I agree with you. I don't think necessarily that Morata has been consistent, but I'm going to be honest with you. I love him. I just think that he's been poorly utilized, and I can't judge anyone's performance based on Pirlo, because everyone is just doing what they can, and it's in personal initiatives, which is why Chiesa and maybe McKennie, like Nicky has pointed out so much, that's what they've benefited from, is the lack of organization. Whereas perhaps some others, if you place it in there, they'll be a lot better. So it's very difficult for me to make these judgments, because maybe Rabiot could grow a lot more, or maybe, you know, Ramsey would find his place with somebody like Allegri or an Ancelotti or whatever you want to say. So it's very difficult to say that, but I do think money shouldn't be primary, because if we look at Atalanta, they are literally the poster child of how to run a team that you don't have to spend so much money for and you have tactical innovation.
There's a few different things to tie up in that. I do think one point that actually, like, we really haven't talked about this whole season, because we've talked about it with other clubs. Juventus, compared to another season, it came into my head when you were talking about Liverpool. Juventus have lost their home advantage, which actually has been meaningful. It's not the COP. It's not even the Olimpico when it's full. But Juventus did, when they built that new stadium, go a lot of games without losing. So that matters. Mm. But on your sort of broader point about the way that the team is structured, I think that you slightly glossed over, like, the fact that they did bring in some experienced players, some really astute signings of experienced players like Carlos Tevez, players you're like, right, this is someone who's motivated, who can slot right in and go. But your sort of broader point that it was a younger project and sort of built more organically is certainly true. The problem is, you have positioned yourself now with this huge weight of wages because you got obsessed with this free transfer strategy on players who were already hard to shift, because not many people will pay Aaron Ramsey that or Rabiot that. And now you've run into this specific situation of the pandemic market where no one is going to offer that. So honestly, I think it's going to be a really complicated few years for you until those contracts are dealt with. And the thing that you actually probably have to be most careful of is not being so desperate to fix it immediately that you create bigger problems for yourself.
Yeah.
It may well be with someone like Ramsey that you have to say to another club, look, we will pay half his wages just to get him out on loan, so at least that's something off. It may be that you have to make those sorts of decisions that aren't very palatable in the short term just to help yourself a bit.
Great.
And that is why, to bring it back to what Matteo was asking to begin with, the Ronaldo situation is such a conundrum. I disagree slightly that you need to overhaul the attack. I think that with the right manager, having Chiesa, having Kulusevski, having Ronaldo, I know he's been such a disappointment, but having maybe there's someone out there who can reclaim the Bernardeschi project. I think you have enough pieces to do something.
I think only Mina can do that.
Well, He plays okay for Italy.
Because he doesn't play as a left back for Italy. He plays as a right winger, which is where he grew up at Fiorentina, or as a second striker.
There's talent there. The midfield is a problem.
Everything becomes Bernardeschi Charatia. No matter what, we start with Juventus, it ends on Bernardeschi. This has been true this entire season.
I agree with you. The attack and the defense, they're not bad at all. It's just the midfield. I agree with that, and I do just think you're right with the good coach, anything can be achieved, really, honestly.
So, Mina, you touched upon the coaching situation and you mentioned Max Allegri, and I'm glad you did, because your boy Allegri was in the media in the Gazzetta dello Sport. They said Max Allegri's return to Juventus ? And the reports are that they say that he wants the revolution that he thought he was getting 2 years ago before he left and was replaced by Maurizio Sarri. So Juventus fans never really got to see that revolution of Allegri, because Allegri took the squad that Antonio Conte helped build. He took that kind of the skeleton of the team. And I thought the team in the end was better. They made 2 Champions League finals, which they never did under Antonio Conte. And they certainly never did after Max Allegri. So the best version of Juventus that we saw in my mind was those first years of Max Allegri. All he did was win. And then Juventus thought, you know what, we need to play beautiful football. And that never worked with Maurizio Sarri. It's certainly not working now with Andrea Pirlo. So, Mina, what was that revolution that Allegri wanted? How do you think the squad would be now under Allegri? What kind of changes would he want? And do you think that is potentially a good move to go back to a coach that Juventus know really well? And who has actually managed, by the way, let's add that, who was actually managed before in his life. That's another big thing.
Might have won the title before he got Juventus.
And manage big clubs. Look, this is an interesting one, because I feel like a lot of people just feel like he's a pragmatist, he's a little bit boring, he's a tactician, and you know, everyone wants to see this new style of football where everyone plays out from the back and it's all very exciting and very attacking. And the difference with Allegri is he's a company man. He is somebody who talks to the sporting director or the people involved. By the way, that is something that we need to talk about, is whether or not Fabio Paratici should be able to keep his job. You know, I'm sorry, but after everything that we're talking about, like, it's a little bit strange that we have keep changing coaches, and yet, you know, maybe there was a loss there when we lost Marotta. Look what's happened in Inter, you know? Anyway, but for Allegri, it was a question of, you know, this is what you have, do something with it. And he's very good at doing something with it. You know, just give him the different tools and he'll figure out a way of trying to blend it all together and slowly bringing out something that can actually work. And I think that when you look at the difference between, for example, when he took on Real Madrid in the semifinals, when he took on Barcelona in the semifinals and won big matches, that tactically he was always somebody who outwitted the opponent, not necessarily with beautiful play, but every time that they did lose, you just thought to yourselves, well, the team is less than all the opponents. So you understand that the players are not as great. So at the end of the day, when you come to finals, the team with the better players, the, you know, more intelligent and experienced or whatever it is, bigger brands of players will win. And I think that in 2017, he had taken Juventus to, he's already managed three or four doubles, domestic doubles. He'd reached 2 Champions League final and it was just not going over the hurdle. And I think that's when he just thought to himself, I've done a lot here and I don't know whether I want to come back. You know, I want to only come back. It's a little bit like Guardiola after he won the treble. I need to change something because, you know, it's all starting to get a little bit stale. And I need there to be a revolution so people continue to listen to me so that I can still hold their attention and create something special. And he did want to majorly overhaul the midfield. That was his primary concern at the time. And when he spoke to Allegri, when Allegri spoke to Agnelli, I do get very mixed up with these names sometimes. Agnelli said to him, look, you deserve to have what you want. I guess we'll talk all together. And to be honest, I don't think they ever really satisfied him. I thought they tried to satisfy him by banishing Bonucci. That wasn't really the only way to satisfy him. It was about, let's bring him the players he wants so much. And I don't think they ever did that. And so now I think the revolution would be where it is a lot more of 50% his power, 50% sporting power. And I think that what Agnelli has finally discovered when everyone's sitting there saying we really miss Allegri, even when he speaks, is that he is a company man, because even when he started talking about three-man back lines, Galliani told him that nobody wins in Europe with a three-man back line. He's somebody who listens to advice and then figures it out. So I think that he's somebody who will work well with management, but he would like a little bit more power. He wants something to be shaken up. He wants to mix youth with experienced players. And let's be honest, he's the only man that I can genuinely think will return the prestige to the side. Somebody that you can at least count on as a guarantee to just win for a couple of years so that you can make money at this moment in time, because there's severe debts and there's nobody right now that can offer the guarantees that he does. So I don't care if it's going back old. I don't care if it's all stale. At this moment in time, money, I'm sorry, it's still a business and they need to make money or they risk never really being able to compete at the level that they've been so desperate to compete at.
There's that conversation about Galliani. I remember Allegri in that run to the title at Milan, because of course it wasn't just Galliani trying to give him orders back then, it was Silvio Berlusconi. And I remember thinking, because this was before we knew that Allegri was going to go on to become Max Allegri with a tactics app, who went to Juventus and took them to a Champions League final. And I remember there being this sort of moment where Berlusconi was sort of scolding him publicly, because that's what Berlusconi used to do with his managers, and said, you need to play two up top, you need to have two strikers, because that was another of his obsessions. And also, You can't keep coming on TV and doing these interviews with messed up hair. And like within a week, you know, the next week at his press conference, Allegri showed up with perfect hair and kept his exact formation he was using before. And I always thought that was the man that Allegri was. He knew how to dance the dance with his bosses. And I think he's always known how to do that, but he's not a soft touch. And he also understands what he wants. I think it's a really interesting point about how long one manager can stay in one place without tearing things up and starting over, because there are very, very few examples in the modern game of managers who've been able to stay in one place and keep winning. And even Ferguson at United, who's sort of held up as the most sort of impressive example, I think, of that in European football, he did have to tear things up and go through some fallow years to get there. So I don't think it's necessarily was wrong for Allegri and Juventus to part ways when they did. Perhaps even it needed to happen. And it's certainly sort of fascinating to think, I don't believe that Juventus would have won 9 consecutive titles with any one manager if you kept all the way through it. I think it's just too hard to do. But the question of whether or not he can have the revolution, as Gazzetta put it, that he wanted in this moment, is the one that remains complicated to me.
And I wonder if that revolution has to do with Cristiano Ronaldo potentially leaving, because then it would be a revolution. They would have some finances that are loosening up and they would genuinely be able to say, right, we're going to go to that next phase where we're not going to try to win everything right now. We're not expected to win the Champions League, but we can focus on Federico Chiesa and whatever other young players you put. Maybe it's Kulusevski and some of the other players like Arthur in the midfield, McKennie, whatever they want to do. But that can only happen, I think, with Cristiano Ronaldo parting ways. I would hate to see it, because Cristiano Ronaldo has been nothing but brilliant for Juventus. You score a goal a game, you are absolutely brilliant. Mina?
I just want to quickly say that as much as Ronaldo, I understand that he does take away a lot of finances, but you know, when they were talking about Messi and how much he commands in his wages, what people don't understand is he also brings in a lot as well. Mm-hmm. And so you have to take all the money that he's bringing in from how elevated sponsorship deals are when his name is attached to Juventus, how many much more viewers will Juventus get with him. Like I said, 7.7 million people watched Juventus versus Crotone and only 5 million watched the Milan derby. I mean, that generates sponsorship deals, that generates so much money for Juventus. So yeah, his wages are huge, but it will also be taking away everything that he's bringing in, as well as the appeal, as well as the appeal of joining Juventus.
Yeah, that's a great point, Mina. And he's also the face of the league, right? When someone buys Serie A rights, you put Cristiano Ronaldo on the cover because he is maybe the most recognizable sports figure in the entire world. He's been the true icon that Serie A was missing throughout the last decade, right? Where there was talk of the Serie A, it's like a shadow of itself. But then you bring in Cristiano Ronaldo, who's a once-in-a-generation talent, one of the best players of all time. Suddenly you have that face, you have that a memory of the good old days, whether it was the 90s or the mid-2000s, when Italian teams were going all the way in the Champions League. But we can't mention the whole managerial situation at Juventus without then talking about what's happening at Milan, because they're in a similarly bad position. They have now been destroyed by Lazio. Ciro Immobile looked like the best striker in the world against that Milan defense. And Milan in 2021, nothing like the Milan we saw in 2020 under Stefano Pioli when everything was great. And I hate to bring up this cliche, but it's something that has followed around Stefano Pioli throughout his career, that when he takes over a team, he starts very well and then it tapers off and then everything goes out of plan and he gets sacked. So that's the question that I wanted to bring up. And I just want to weigh on it before I throw it to both of you, Mina and Nikki, because this is something that's actually been upsetting me. Where Milan are right now is who we thought they were before the season. No one was expecting Milan to lead the league. No one was even really expecting them to finish top four. We knew that it would be a battle. We knew that they would be hovering around this area of fourth or fifth place. It's just that it's come after we've all sort of been blinded by the form that they showed, which in the end was a mirage, because this isn't a team that can continue this for a whole season, as we've seen, because they just don't have the depth or the talent that Inter have or Juventus, who's another team that's massively underachieving. So they've just gone to where exactly we thought they were based on the squad that they have. So is Stefano Pioli underperforming now? I think right now his team is exactly where they should have been. They were overachieving for a very long stretch, and that gave everyone the false impression that they genuinely were maybe a Scudetto contender or even a favorite. But I remember, and I have the receipts on this show, that we were still saying, watch out for Inter. It's going to be Inter. It's going to be Juventus. We were wrong with the Juventus part, but I think we nailed it with Inter. So the question is, Milan finish outside the top four, which, by the way, would be the perfect encapsulation of Milan's last 7 years, right, of this quote-unquote banter era. Is that also the end of Stefano Pioli?
The problem is, and you've already mentioned it, the problem is the narrative of Stefano Pioli's career, which is every big club he's been to, he's had a golden period, and then he hasn't managed to maintain it. And it's sort of interesting, because we were just talking about this in the context of every manager. Like, and I do believe this. Like, I think every manager who's successful at a club has a shelf life on that success. Now, the really great ones can have some downtime and then come back to the greatness, but you can't stay great forever, right? So there's always some sort of, the problem is that Pioli's always seems to be a bit too short, really. You know, he didn't quite manage to keep things good long enough at Inter. He didn't quite manage to get Fiorentina back to where they were supposed to be. Same story at Lazio, you know, it fell apart too quickly. And this is the most agonizing of all, because actually he was, as we've talked about, he was on top of the world for a full year. It's just that year didn't quite marry up with the schedule in the way that you'd want it to. Now, the counterpoint to that is all of these clubs, when the going got tough, said, and that's it, and didn't give him the chance to sort of get through that rough bit and come back around. And maybe he would if he's given that time at Milan. We've already said it on this episode. I think everyone in football is knackered. I think everyone is so tired right now. And judgments that are made right now to make them sort of definitive and all-encompassing is really hard for me. Like, I don't think that what I'm seeing right now means that Pioli and Milan can't do well together again in the future. But even though you might be right, Matteo, that this is about in line with expectations before the season, you can't change the way that it's happened, which is this team was Campione d'Inverno. This team was top of the table at halfway. Now you can say, sure, we didn't think they were going to win the league. But from there, from first at halfway to not make the top four, it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt on a deep level that will stay with players as well as the fans. The players will not forget the experience, that feeling of powerlessness that has come in the second half of the season.
It would be the ultimate gut punch. And Nikki, you've mentioned now twice the schedule, and I think we've all forgotten because this last 13, 14 months has felt like maybe 10 years, but there was a post-lockdown Serie A when teams were playing three games a week. And it's why I thought Lazio fell off. Remember, Lazio went into that post-lockdown 1 point behind Juventus, and we were talking about them as the potential new title challengers, but they fell off because of the amount of games, because of COVID cases, and they just didn't have the depth to compete with Juventus, who won under Maurizio Sarri. And there wasn't that summer period where players do get a rest before all the, you know, ICC and all the summer tournaments. They basically had, what, a few weeks? And then it was back to playing. It was, you know, the Europa League final. And then it felt like a few weeks later, Serie A came back and it was back to the grind, back to three games a week and COVID cases. So maybe this is going to be the toughest season that we've ever seen to judge genuinely what is going on, because there's been such an element of randomness. I mean, from 1 week to the next, you could have half your squad wiped out with COVID. And that's aside from the injuries, where you'd have more anyway because of how many games these teams are playing. So maybe it's difficult to have these reactionary takes on a season that is unlike any other that we'll ever see in our lifetime. And maybe this is just one that we kind of say, you know what, that was a really difficult one to judge. Let's move on.
Yeah, I think that when you look over Pioli's career, and I do understand that, and we've spoken about this like on the show, that the history with him is that sometimes it falls apart and we don't know if he can ever get it back on track. And yeah, when I look at the evidence, I just think, you know, he's been faced with really tough situations. It's a little bit like Gattuso at Milan, you know. The guy had absences left, right, and center, so it was very hard to see what he could really do. And even at Napoli, you know, it was like they started brilliantly, lots of injuries, they fell apart, and now they're back to doing a lot, which shows you the power of Gattuso's, you know, coaching. I think that Pioli's always faced a lot of obstacles. And with Inter, for example, they always have a short fuse. They'll sack you if you don't do well. We've seen it with Gasperini. We've seen it with Pioli. We've seen it with so many different coaches, you know, Rafa Benitez. Sometimes, rightly or wrongly, whatever it is, coaches don't have the time to really try to get back on track. And you look at with Pioli, and, you know, he lost Davide Astori at Fiorentina. You know, he tried to bring the team back. And frankly speaking, who has done well with Fiorentina since? It's been a shambolic. It's a little bit like when everyone was talking about Allegri not managing at Milan when he lost to Conte. I mean, who managed to get Milan out of that bubble? So I think with Pioli, it's very difficult to judge, because I feel like he's always had really great excuses for why things haven't worked out. And I look at the squad, and I agree with you, Matteo. I look at, you know, Castillejo, Samek, because they're good players, but they're not players that should be winning a title over Ronaldo and Lukaku. And, you know, I mean, even Dzeko at Roma. Do you see what I mean? Like, and Napoli with Osimhen and Insigne and everyone that they've got going for themselves. There is also a lack of quality replacement. I think they have a lot of talent up front, don't get me wrong, but they're still very young. And Ibrahimovic has missed a lot of games, a lot.
Mina, sorry to cut you off, Mina. That's actually a great point, because aside from Ibrahimovic, who's scored almost a goal a game, what they had last season was Ante Rebic in a half season basically scoring 12 goals. And in this campaign, Rafael Leao has been a big disappointment. This is someone that they paid a lot of money for, over 35 million. And I don't know what kind of player he is. He just kind of trudges around sometimes, looks completely disinterested. He's a very frustrating player to watch because of the talent he has. Ante Rebic, throughout his career, has not been a volume goal scorer. He's been someone who kind of ebbs and flows and drifts. And, you know, sometimes he'll give you two goals and he'll look brilliant, but then, you know, he won't score for five or six games. And he's not someone you can count on as a consistent goal scoring player. So I think the biggest key for Milan this summer, I know they've re-signed Zlatan Ibrahimovic until 2022. They need to get that backup striker. We'll get into that in the transfer segment, but there are some issues. And Castillejo and Salamakers, not really good enough for a team that is top four. And Radek Krunic is playing way too much as well, by the way.
I mean, for how long did we have Maite? Because there was no Benacer. And I do think that sometimes, like, you know, you take certain players out and it makes a difference. I mean, it might not make a difference when you can replace, like, Brozovic with Eriksen, but it does make a difference when you're replacing, you know, Theo Hernandez with Dalot. I mean, Theo Hernandez himself has problems. He's probably not first choice for many big clubs. And the fact is that his replacement is somebody who would never never be a first choice for a top club, you know? So I think these things matter. And then you have to consider the fact that they started Europa League from the very beginning, you know, really went through the preliminaries, and then they stayed in the Europa League very far. And this is after, like you said, a very small, compact season last year where they're trying to just play as many games as possible. So I feel like that it's very difficult to judge Milan at the moment, and it's almost unfair. And what you have with children, like you said, is those inconsistencies where you never know whether Leao will be a stud or a dud in any given match. And so I think it's highly unfair right now to say to Pioli, and I agree, I do think there's something to be seen about how they fall, how they've fallen. But when I look overall, his tactics, the way his team is arranged against United, commanded so much worldwide respect for the way that he managed that team. Just the fact that tactically you can interchange all these players who are children and still understand the schemes, I think that for me is a sign of great management. It's not somebody who's got a philosophy. It's somebody who's putting players at the very core. And for me, I'll always believe in a coach like that.
When we come back, Mina has plenty of praise for both Antonio Conte and Inter. After another 1-0 win over the weekend, Inter are in a position to now win the Scudetto for the first time since Jose Mourinho's treble-winning season more than a decade ago. So we'll save the season review for when they actually do it mathematically and it's done and dusted. But for now, Mina, I wanted to ask you one thing. With the domination that we've seen from the Nerazzurri over this course of the second half of the Serie A season, is Conte now the manager that others are going to try to emulate? Are we seeing a return to Catenaccio? Is this going to be the way forward for football in 2021 and 2022?
Okay. Dear listener, I just want to let you know, just because we have mini breaks in between segments, and all Matteo ever says is, I've got to think of something that will really annoy Mina. And this happens every segment. Okay? And it's almost like he stands there with a box of matches thinking, how can we light her up?
Yeah. That was the one. Suddenly Catenaccio's the way forward. No more
tiki-taka possession. This isn't the question that actually upsets me, because
Mina's pro Catenaccio.
Exactly.
It's a copycat league. Let's just say how it is. Everyone's already copied Conte once when he did this back three revolution, and then half the teams in Serie A. So Conte is
a trendsetter. It's almost like Zaccheroni never existed. Yeah, it's like the
Conte
fourth night.
Conte is the ultimate trendsetter.
Nobody's ever thought of a back three. Conte, what a revolutionary. I mean, bandwagons are
But to
are
do it
really
with that success. Zaccheroni did not have that success with the back three that Conte did at Juventus.
I mean, let's Atalanta say,
Conte is
with
the ultimate
three.
Trendsetter among coaches in Serie A in the last 10 years.
The back three conversation is hilarious, because when Gasperini came to Inter, where it lasted about 5 minutes, he was killed for it. That was honestly, I think, part of the reason why Gasperini got fired so quickly was not just results, which were bad. They were bad results Gasperini had in the short time he was there. But before he'd even taken charge of a game, there was this big conversation of, should a team like Inter be playing with a back three? Napoli were already playing with a back three at the time and playing in the Champions League. So it was a ridiculous conversation then. But I do like that you sort of did a dummy there on Mina, where like you gave her one question that she was like ready to get annoyed by, and then you threw in a curveball and it worked. So well done, Matteo.
But you know, even the 4-2-4 is not his, like, you know, tactical revolution. He took that from Ventura.
There's nothing new in football.
Well, he copied the back three from Mazzarri, didn't he? Didn't he copy it from Napoli? That his Juventus played Napoli, and he was like, wow, this is genius. I need to try this at Juve. And so Walter Mazzarri maybe is the true architect of the modern back three.
And we laugh at him, and he's gotten sacked.
Do you know, though? I mean, I think, like, we're sort of poking fun, and Mazzarri has been so boring to watch his teams in recent seasons. But to be fair to him, his first half, they were pretty good. They were.
Excellent counter-attacking sides. Lavezzi, I tre tenori, right? Hamsik, Lavezzi, and Cavani. Mm-hmm.
To be honest, he took Torino, like, in his, you know, he didn't do badly with Torino in his last job as well. Like, I know we do laugh about him because he will never be a coach that I'd be like, wow. And I like boring coaches, so that's saying something, you know, but...
Mina, Mazzarri's Torino was conceding 5 goals a game. That's why he got sacked. Yeah, it was the worst stretch of defensive football I've ever seen over the course of a 3-month.
But let's be honest,
they're
fighting relegation now, so maybe there's something to be said about that.
Hold on, how did we get from talking about Inter, their amazing accomplishments, to Walter Mazzarri at Torino? This is nuts. This has gone completely off the rails now, as it always does when we talk about Conte and Inter. This is a common thread in Serie A.
To bring it back onto the rails of that conversation about, like, is defensive football going to be the mode again? And I think it's always worth repeating over and over again. People who don't pay attention, Serie A has been one of the highest scoring leagues in Europe for a while. Having said that, I think if you went back for the last decade in which it's basically always been Juventus, the number of years in which Juventus have been the team that conceded the fewest goals in Serie A has been almost all of them. And you can take that back further for another 10 years, and you would still find that the team that conceded the fewest goals has won the league 9 times out of 10. It's really like that close of a correlation. It's not every time, but it's the vast majority of times. And that's probably true in other leagues as well, but it certainly has been true in Italy. And it's certainly, in my opinion, the story of this Inter season is at the beginning of the campaign, they were not defending well. When they started defending well, it hasn't been great to watch always. I mean, I'm not here telling you that Inter Verona was the game that you should have watched this weekend, because it wasn't. It was boring. But it's going to win them a title, and it's going to do it in the most impressive fashion, because even though you can say, yes, everyone else has dropped off, Inter have had 2 draws in this whole second half of the season. They've won every other game. You can't ask for more than that.
To be honest with you, I mean, other than Maurizio Sarri and Napoli, it's been a while since we've seen a side that have done really well as playing really beautiful football, like stuff that will really make you think, wow, you know? And I think a lot of the times, you know, Antonio Conte realized that when he was trying to achieve this, you know, stylish play, it wasn't getting him the point. So it's like, let's lock down, let's try to figure this out. Because frankly speaking, people remember trophies, and he will be forever remembered as the man who ended Juventus's reign and the one who started potentially Inter's. So I think that matters more than anything. And when you look at the squad, frankly speaking, I mean, this game was atrocious, but it was fun to watch if you were, I guess, you know, at least trying to suss out what, you know, Ivan Juric was doing for Verona, because Tamezi is, for me, oh, what a lovely player to watch. What a lovely, lovely, lovely player to watch. But, you know, it's funny, because when we were talking about Stefano Pioli as a side note about his side being a team that is so well managed and so tactically superior often enough to the opponent. Gasperini, his side is usually tactically superior, but you can't help it if your players are not just as good. You know, when you have Salmakers and Castillejo, you have Maiella, like they did at Atalanta, like, you know, in this last match that was causing them problems. If your players are inferior, then it makes a difference. But from a tactical level, I can't always tell you Antonio Conte is superior in that. But he has enough in terms of great players and his tactical ability to win these trophies. But I guess this is where I've always stopped with him, because there are moments in which I just think, on a tactical level, Juric, did you? But then the substitutions that he managed in the second half were the reasons also, because he took off some great players and left you with, and you know, you made the right changes as well. But I do sometimes think that, like I said to you, it's not about a style of play. It's just about the fact that sometimes I do think he wins by virtue of stuff like a great defense, better players, and, you know, knowing things in a very disciplined and organized fashion. That is something that is truly Antonio Conte. The mentality, nobody does better than Antonio Conte in a mentality, in terms of really honing in what your basics are, the foundations of a team, of on a tactical structure. He's the very best at that. He's not adaptive, but he's very good at getting you to learn that. And I think, again, that's his thing. But when I look at people like Gasperini, who can always chop and change and produce something fantastic, Pioli, who can just take a bunch of kids and overachieve, I think sometimes with me, I struggle to sometimes give Antonio Conte a lot of praise, because I do see these ones and I'm more in awe of that.
I do think that what is most impressive about this run is... you know, it's the thing which you're saying you do find impressive about him. You know, like it's the shift in mentality, because, like, this is Inter. And I have Inter supporters that I know who, as recently as like a week or two ago, were going, yeah, but we'll still find a way to do something wrong, because we always do. Like, we'll find a way to, and it's not going to happen. Like, there has been this change that he wanted, the change that he said at the beginning was this sort of point of fixation almost. We're not going to be Pazza Inter anymore. They're not Pazza Inter. They're quite boring Inter sometimes, but they're a very impressive Inter.
You see, here's the thing. Like, I agree with this, and I do. I never want to take that away from him because that is so Antonio Conte in terms of mentality. Like, really, I mean, everything about what he did at Juventus was based on that. I almost don't know how to judge if that's true for Juventus, because in every year that's happened, you know, there hasn't been an actual competitor. I mean, you know, for the first start of the season, he was, what, second to a Milan that was just rampaging everything going forward. But he hasn't really had someone breathing down his neck, you know. It just, 3 games in a row, 2 draws, like a really tough performance against Verona. I mean, that's just him playing every 3 days, not doing 3 competitions, not fighting on all fronts, not having the start of the season that Milan had, not having the changes. I mean, this is consistent Inter with the same coach, many of the same players, but just additional quality without a genuine competitor, because Milan have been atrocious in 2021. Juventus have been atrocious since December. I don't know whether I can honestly tell you that they have felt the pressure and continued to really fight, you know, in the same way that, say, what, you know, Manchester City did when Liverpool were breathing down their necks. I don't know whether I can honestly tell you their mentality is what changed, or the fact of the matter is Serie A collapsed and they were the ones that you could lean on. But I don't also agree with you in the sense that that's also quite harsh, like, because they are the team that have been consistent. They deserve to win the plaudits because they are the only team that haven't collapsed this season. But again, show me you can do it when you are managing to fight on all fronts, not fall apart just now, as we've seen in your 3 games, you know, three back-to-back games, and you've all tired out. I want to see that you can prove to me that when someone is breathing down your neck, that when there is the tough competition of a Napoli under Sarri or Roma once upon a time with Spalletti, when, you know, it was Jose Mourinho or whatever he was, Mancini back then, whether you can really make it through. And that's my question. I want to see Inter next season when there is, let's say, a different type of season going on, hopefully without COVID and with fans back in the stadium.
Well, if they play the way that they did in the second half of the season in 2021, I assume they would get out of the Champions League group stage. And it almost feels so far away, doesn't it? Because the Inter that we saw in the first half, there was constant criticism, there was nervousness. And even on this show, it was a completely different vibe where it always felt negative and heavy when we were covering them. And I think a lot of that had to do with finishing fourth in the Champions League group, which is an absolute embarrassment for a team that had the quality. And now we see what they are when they realize their potential, which is the top side in Serie A that's finally ended the Juventus dynasty of 9 consecutive Scudetti. If that version of Inter, which I now believe this is the real Inter, right? Maybe Antonio Conte just needed more time. And in that time, he's sort of revolutionized the squad. He's included Christian Eriksen, who's had a big role to play since January. He's included Ivan Perisic, who he wanted away, went to win a treble at Bayern. Now he's back and he's playing well at left wing back. And those are 2 interesting players that give them more offensive dynamism, we could say, whether it's down the middle or on the flank. So Antonio Conte has done really well in adapting and in finally realizing that key players that he thought weren't good for his system actually have a pretty substantial role now with the Nerazzurri.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely have, having said we'll sort of save the reflection for next week, we've sort of done a bit of it here. Maybe next week we'll focus more on the players. Look, I think in terms of competition, I agree. Like, it'd be way more fun to have competition. It'd be more interesting, but you can only beat what's in front of you. And in the end, Inter have done that irresistibly. Like, they dropping 4 points in a draw in a second half of the season, I don't actually care if the competition is seen as high level or not, because it's just really rare. It's really rare, even in weak seasons, for teams to go on runs this long. They don't happen very often. And I think that is noteworthy in my opinion, like, to be able to be this consistent. There will be a really, really fascinating time next season when we look at what you just said, Matteo, the Champions League group stage, because this year, I said it at the time, actually, of all the teams dealing with the sort of tiredness that have made this year so particular, Inter had the most intense start to the season because they'd just come off that Europa League final. So their last season had carried on longer. And as we've talked about plenty of times, Conte is this maniacal, you must run hard coach. And if you looked at the stats on yards covered in the Europa League, they've done more than other teams. If you looked at stats, yards covered in Serie A, they've done more than most teams. So to me, it was always logical that they were going to sort of be a team that came into the start of the season a bit more run down than some others. They've sort of gone the other way to, say, a Milan, where they've now got back into the groove as a team like Milan have found the legs going from underneath them. And that's not all. It's almost neither here nor there. We're back to that conversation we had before of like, what can you judge here? Like, what can you sort of fairly assess against one situation and another in this really weird year? But again, for me, the thing that you can assess, show me other teams that have gone on runs this long of beating teams, even if you think the opposition aren't impressive. It's rare. It doesn't happen very often.
Well, I mean, I guess you could say Milan didn't, just not in the right times.
Yes, and I think Milan were really impressive. And yeah, that's why Pioli's work is not in question.
I think also you're right about that, about the fact that, you know, the fact of the matter is that in the Europa League, they did run a lot more. But then I guess these bring up other questions about whether or not this is a coach that can fight on three competitions with that level of style of play. Mm. Like, how can people recover when they're playing so often? Because I just looked at this match and you could just see there's Lukaku a little bit exhausted. And, you know, they've got a great fitness coach. I'm not everyone at this period, except Atalanta, because I was saying secretly to Nicky Bandini, I almost feel like, well, what are they doing? How is this possible? Are they like yoga meditating after every match and just recovering straight away? Because their physical condition is great. But there have to be questions asked about whether or not this is a team in that style of play, if they can do that when there is a heavy season ahead of them.
It's never too early to talk about the transfer window here on Serie A. So we know it gets clicks, and in the end, that's all we want from you guys is those clicks. So we'll talk about the three players that have been making an appearance in the media about potentially moving on. The biggest name, Gigio Donnarumma, who at only 21, he can now finally buy a beer in the United States. He's already played more than five full seasons in Serie A. He could go on to be the all-time caps leader in games played in football history if he plays until he's in his early 40s like Gigi Buffon. But Donnarumma has been linked to one of Milan's biggest rivals, Juventus, who might be trying to move on from Wojciech Szczesny. Gigi Buffon, he might go on until he's 50, but he's not going to be starting anymore. So, Mina, what's the latest that you've heard about Donnarumma and Juventus? Do you think it's going to happen?
I think it's something that Mino Raiola would like to happen, for the simple sake that, you know, he's got a great relationship with Juventus and he can continue to sort of bring as much money as possible with them. Obviously, as Nikki mentioned before, they are a little bit of obsessed with a free transfer and high wages. You know, that little deal just works perfectly for them. Szczesny is a great shot stopper, but he's not necessarily a great goalkeeper. And I think that there is a point where sometimes you want somebody to grow with the team and be everlasting. Again, the worry is that with somebody who is owned by Mino Raiola and who is very good and being consistent, which is Donnarumma, that every year the price will keep going up by 2 million. And then there will be a time where he'll be commanding as much as, 24 million or whatever a year, because I wouldn't put it past them. What, Verratti's on 17, you know, they're kind of like ridiculous figures to mention at the moment. But for Donnarumma, I do think he's worth a lot of money. I know that Juventus probably wouldn't say no if that's an opportunity. The question is that if Ronaldo will jump ship because it's the Europa League, and let's say Milan do make top four, will Donnarumma want to now, after finally having his chance to play Champions League, go and join Juve? I think not.
Yeah, I mean, I've said it before. I think Donnarumma is on the path to being really, really special. And I think Szczesny is he's a fine goalkeeper, but he's not the level of goalkeeper that you sort of think will win those critical games for you, in my opinion, like a great keeper can. The thing is, I think there is a romantic vision of this story for some people at Juventus, that you are signing your next Buffon, who will be there for the next 15 years, and you won't have to worry about that position, and he'll become an icon in the same way. And great, he's even got the same name. But
true.
I don't believe that's the reality of perhaps modern football, but certainly of Mino Raiola clients. I think if you sign Donnarumma now, yes, you have a young talent that can be sold on for a high value again in the future, but I think he'll be there for 3 or 4 years and then he'll be on to the next adventure.
And it feels like every time that Gigio Donnarumma's name is in the transfer talk. That's when he has these dips with Milan. He's had a dip now where he's made mistakes recently. It happened the first time that Mino Raiola wanted a huge bump in his wages, that fans were calling him Dollarumma. And remember that scene when everyone started throwing dollar bills or euro notes at him in goal, and they were showering him with money because they thought that's all he cared about. And that was the toughest stretch that Donnarumma had at Milan, when his form dipped the most, and a lot of Milan fans were saying he's even worth it, the money that they're saying that they want to pay for this guy. So maybe this kind of talk outside the pitch does affect Donnarumma's performances. You could also say that it isn't really him, it's that Milan are conceding more opportunities in the last few games when their form has dipped and their defense has been shaken up a bit with players, you know, like Romagnoli no longer in the picture. He got injured, and Fikayo Tomori stepping in alongside Kjaer. There's a lot more movement in front of Donnarumma than what he was used to in 2020. But to me, this isn't the make or break for Milan. It's not the goalkeeper that is going to bring Milan to the heights that they had before. Remember that Milan throughout, think of even like Sebastiano Rossi, right? That he played with one of the best teams of all time. He was an average goalkeeper, above average. Think of Cristian Abbiati. Think of, okay, Dida had his good spell and then the flare happened and then he became a different player. But Milan's never really been known for having the best goalkeepers. When you think of all the best Milan sides, it's never the goalkeeper you think about. It's always the players in front. So if they have Juan Musso in goal, is Milan going to be like, oh no, how do we finish top four now with Juan Musso? No, it's the outfield players that Milan have to change.
Milan maybe not be known for a great goalkeeper, but they're known for, you know, Maldini and Baresi and Costa Corte. You could honestly shove me in the back and I would be all right.
But one shot come to him at a game. Rossi never had to make a save because he had the best defense of all time in front of him. That is a good point, but I'm just saying that it's not the goalkeeper that gives you the success that Milan had in the past. It's having the right outfield players. It's adding depth. It's getting to the Champions League and be able to reinvest that money well.
You can't afford that. And Tomori's making mistakes now. He's made mistakes in this game against Lazio. He struggles with pace. Kjaer is getting older. Romagnoli, as we've already discussed, has so many vulnerabilities. It's a lot to buy a centre-back. So if I'm having to pay money to have an exceptional back four, I'd rather have a superhero for a goalkeeper. I feel like it's more cost effective.
Look, there's more than one way to build a team. I think that having a great goalkeeper can definitely cover up some flaws. I think there are teams, even at the very highest level, where I think the difference between you being a team that's reaching the latter stages of the Champions League and a team that doesn't is that goalkeeper. I think there's times with Atletico Madrid being a good example. They were always a very good team under Simeone. I'm not suggesting this, it would have been rubbish without him, but I think Jan Oblak was worth significant difference to that team. And that's the reality of having a world-class player at any position. So yes, you can have a great defense and not have Donnarumma, but you have a great goalkeeper right now. And if he goes, where's the great defense coming from? Because as Mina's pointed out, let's not throw Tomori under the bus, by the way, because he's still a kid.
Not at all.
But he made a mistake against Joaquin Correa, who's a great dribbler. He missed out his challenge inside the box. I'm not going to rate him or
no. But again, there were mistakes in the game before that. But what I'm saying is he's a kid.
Yeah,
so I'm not going to expect him to be this fantastic Baresi every game. There are going to be times where there are going to be mistakes, and if you have a superhero at the back, it can cover up and allow him to grow. Because Tomori, from everyone, I think, has the potential to be phenomenal. So by all means, I don't want to throw him under the bus. Just want to point that out. Yeah.
So continuing the transfer talks, and it is strikers, and the two biggest ones that have been mentioned in the Italian media are Andrea Belotti, who seemingly has been supposed to leave Torino now for 10 years, but Urbano Cairo, the president of Torino, once said he's worth 100 million euro, and unsurprisingly, no one paid that money to him. And he's definitely not worth that now, because he wasn't worth that after he scored 26 goals in the Serie A season. And now he's about half that rate, which is still good. Still very good Serie A striker. But sorry, Urbano, you missed your chance. The other one is Dusan Vlahovic of Fiorentina. And this is a kid I am so high on. I am a believer. Join the bandwagon. There's still only a few spots left. The Fiorentina striker, who just turned 21, is well on pace to maybe even go above 20 goals this season, and I think he's shown everything. He's shown physique, pace, technique, wonderful scoring ability with header, right or left foot. To me, the complete striker. And both those names have been linked to Milan, as you'd expect, as they're looking forward past Zlatan Ibrahimovic, as he's going to be in his 40s, and he signed that one-year extension. So if you were Milan, if you're the one making the choices up there with Gazzidis and Maldini, which striker would you go for, Gallo Belotti or Dusan Vlahovic? I know where my choice is.
I feel like this is unfair. I mean, I'm certain my choice is the same as your one. It's Vlahovic. He's younger, and I think he's the real deal. I think he's going to be a really, really good player. Sometimes you just sort of, I don't even know how you explain it always. Technically, he's a very accomplished young footballer. As you said, he's great in the air. He's just got the look about him on the pitch. And I think sometimes you just see it with people, and he has that manner of imposing himself against teams and opponents, even like Juventus, who are sort of notionally bigger clubs. And you think, this guy, he's not afraid of anything. He's not worried about being out there and imposing himself. Belotti, if anything, I think he has, he might have a little bit of what Mina was talking about with Lukaku earlier, where I think sometimes you just stop overthinking it and do, because you're better when you do. But I also just think he's good. He's very good at certain things, but I'm not sure he's exceptional at really anything. And when I say exceptional, of course he's exceptional. Of course he's better than the vast majority of footballers who ever lace up their boots, because he wouldn't be playing for Serie A club and scoring lots of goals if he didn't. But I'm talking about that degree of different that marks out the players who play for teams that compete in the Champions League and teams that don't. I think he's just an instinctive good striker, but I don't think he's got that standout pace, that standout technique, even that standout Pippo Inzaghi thing of always being in the right place that would make him something different.
I think people underestimate how Pippo Inzaghi was so smart, but
I was going to mention one of his teammates as well, Gaetano Castrovilli, who is maybe the most frustrating player of all time in my eyes, because you mentioned it. I think, Nikki, you were saying that there's certain players that, like Vlahovic, that they just seem to have it. You watch them, and even if you don't know football that well, you just watch the game and you say, that guy has it, whatever that is, whatever this kind of intangible is, that you just can see that a player has what it takes to go to the next level. To me, if you dropped off an alien right here on a five-a-side pitch and you had Messi, you had, you know, think of Kevin De Bruyne, some of the best players in the world, and you had Castrovilli in there. Okay, follow along. Hold on, because don't laugh yet. And let's say they're all passing the ball around and they're playing on a tight pitch and it's all close ball control. To me, Castrovilli would not look out of place, because when he has the ball, he is one of the most beautiful players that I've seen. He doesn't do anything with it. Like, it doesn't, nothing happens. It doesn't lead to an assist. It doesn't lead to a goal. His touch on the ball, and maybe it's because he was a world-class dancer as a youngster, and he said that it really helped his technique. He has this way of, on his tiptoes, just, it's like he's gliding like on a mist of air. Like, he's not actually ever touching his boots on the pitch. He is such a beautiful player to watch with the ball at his feet. And I watch him and I say, right, this kid, if he actually gives you an end product, he can go on to be such a special player. And I'm just waiting for it to happen, because I want to see him at a huge club. I want to see him playing in the Champions League. And it just isn't there. And he's another one who's been linked with a move away. There was like a PSG link a few months ago. But this is another one that I wanted to just gauge your opinion on him, because every time I call a Fiorentina game, and we've done a lot of them recently here on ESPN, I look at Castrovilli and I see him receiving the ball, and he's so talented. And then I'm like, well, what did that lead to? It was a pass 5 yards away to Pulgar. And that's it.
I thought this season. I think I might even have said it on this podcast. I thought with Chiesa gone, this was his season, and it hasn't happened. And I agree with you. I think there might have been a tiny bit of a reach when you started throwing Messi and De Bruyne around.
Maybe I was exaggerating. Really, I mean, I also had aliens watching the game, so that whole scenario was a bit outlandish.
You see, my issue is sometimes, like, you get this as well with singers. You know, when you're a really great singer, it's like you always want to show your range all the time, but sometimes the song doesn't call for it, and you're just like, stop it. You know, like, and I get with Castrovilli, it's like he... it is a lot of beautiful technique, a lot of foreplay, you know, and then at the end, it's like, well, what's the end product? And I feel like sometimes what he has is a little bit of what Dybala has. He wants perfection at every move. And it can't, sometimes simplicity and a short pass is what will do, what's right for the game. And I don't necessarily feel like he always makes, you know, that he will choose between the short pass or one where he can really bring forward his beautiful technique. So I think that he needs a little bit of teaching. He would do better with a coach and a little bit more stability than what Fiorentina have at the moment, which is constantly trying to grind out results because they're so scared of relegation. Coaches changing shape and players coming and players going. I don't think it's a great setup for him at the moment. When it comes to Vlahovic, he did you see that thing that came out that he's responsible for 65% of all of Fiorentina's points this season?
Wow.
One of the things that I think is also so impressive about him is the fact that he is commended and always spoken about as one of the players who trains so hard, which means he has the ambition. He has this inexplicable desire to make it. And so anyone who has that, anyone who just genuinely loves the game and wants to train day in and day out like Mbappe did, I'm not saying he'll reach that level, but I'm saying that he will do well because of that desire. So having said all of these things, I agree with Nikki. Belotti wouldn't be my choice. Immobile wouldn't be my choice. You know, a lot of these strikers are very good and have done incredible things, and I think it should never be downplayed. But it's, I don't look at many of them and think to myself, oh, I would be so desperate to have you in the same way I feel about Benzema.
So I want all of you to grab your magic ball, gently caress it, because it's prediction time, and we are going to go at both ends of the table. The first being the top four, which we talked about in the first segment, but I did not give you one thing, and that's my bad. I did not tell you my reasoning for Milan being out of the top four at the end of it. Let me read you the schedule real quick for Milan the rest of the season, right? Milan Benevento, Benevento fighting for their lives. Milan Juventus, most important game of the season for both. Milan Torino, another team fighting for their lives to stay in Serie A. Milan Cagliari, that's the third of the three teams that are currently on 21 points. And then Milan Atalanta, just to make things even worse. So they're only facing teams that have everything to play for. They're not facing teams in the that are in that middle area where there's just nothing. They're not going to Europa League. They're not going down. Milan have all the most important games. Juventus, on the other hand, really quickly, Udinese, Milan, Sassuolo, Inter, and then they have the cup game against Atalanta. So without a doubt for me, Milan has the toughest schedule, much tougher than Napoli. Napoli has got a cupcake last month. So my order, before I go to both of you for the top four, it is as it is right now. Inter, Atalanta, Napoli, Juventus, Milan will be playing Bate Borisov in early August.
Oh, I feel like I've been prisoner of the moment a few times in this who's going to make the top four process, and I'm worried that I'm doing it again, but the fixture list is such a compelling argument right now, and I think the Juventus are the other team that I sort of put on the edge of the frame with Milan because they have to play Milan. I think that Inter game at the end of the season, of course, we're going to be past Inter having won the title, but it's Antonio Conte and it's against Juventus. So that's not going to be a stroll. So I think they have a couple of really complicated games, but, and if they lose to Milan, then that's the big one. Of course, that's, you know, a six pointer at this stage. But I do think what you said about the teams that are fighting against relegation there is big. I mean, Cagliari have won three games in a row. Torino had won a couple of games before they lost to Napoli at the weekend. These teams are rounding into form in what's become a really furious fight at the bottom. And I also think that just sort of even separating myself from that, if I'm looking at Juventus and Milan, Juventus have had some disappointing results. They haven't lost 3-0 to anyone.
Fiorentina.
And Milan, since the start of this year, they've conceded three goals to Inter, three goals to Lazio, they conceded three goals to Napoli. They're conceding a lot of goals in these big games. And so it's not only that you have this tough fixture list, you kind of haven't shown me lately that you can win those games against your direct rivals.
So you're going with the current top four then, Nikki?
Yeah, I don't know if it'll be that order. I think, if I'm being honest, I think I still expect, and maybe this is just residual years of learned experience, I think I still expect Juventus to get possibly even ahead of Atalanta to second. But I think the four that are in there now will be the ones who finish there.
Yeah, and just for those who haven't been watching Serie A for whatever reason the last few years, fourth place now doesn't mean anything. You're going to the Champions League group stage. You're not going to the qualification stages. It used to be that it was important whether you finished fourth or third. No longer the case. Mina, your top four?
I don't know. I think that when you, it is on... You
off
know,
the fence, Mina.
I worry, obviously, because I'm a fan of Juventus, so I worry about Juventus. I don't think it's an easy run in. Having said that, I think they do well against big teams. I think they managed it against Napoli, they managed it against Milan, they even managed it against Inter in the Coppa Italia. The only thing about Milan that worries me as well, goal difference is quite low. Head-to-head, they lost against Juventus, they played them again. You know, am I confident that if it is all equal, that they'll probably be the team that is falls apart? So just on head-to-head, goal difference, Milan is probably the worst off from all that sides. I do want to give a little bit of credit to Lazio because they could still come into this if all the teams fall apart. And I think that they've been magnificent, 10 home games in a row that they've won now. They're really building up a lot of steam and momentum. So I don't want to discount them just yet.
That's great.
My heart says Atalanta will definitely make top four on Inter, obviously we know. So it is two places. There's still something when it comes to Napoli that makes me think there's just something about you that makes me worried. You know, it's like all these hundreds of chances against Torino and you managed to make two in the end. You know, Osimhen was fantastic, but there's, you know, they did lose to Spezia. They have garnered some really strange results. So sometimes they can just think to themselves, it's an easy run in and take it for granted. I think it'll be Juve and Milan. I don't know why I have this thing that Napoli will end up falling apart, but I am a little bit of a capitalist sometimes, so I kind of would like Juve, Milan, and Inter to be there.
So you and Claudio Lotito would really get along then?
Yeah, I think so.
right then, opposite end of the table, a wild relegation range race, position 16, 17, and 18, all tied on 31 points. Torino have a game in hand. Cagliari have won three in a row, while Benevento are in poor form, having only won once since January 6th. So I'll start with my predictions. I think it's going to be Benevento joining Parma and Crotone down in Serie B. It didn't seem like this would be the case. Benevento actually did quite well for like 3/4 of the season under Pippo Inzaghi, but they have been in disastrous form since January. And ultimately, I think Cagliari just have too much. I think Cagliari on paper, like the 10th best team in Serie A. Like you look at it and it's like Diego Godin, a guy who's played in World Cups and Champions League and who scored the header that won Atletico Madrid the title in La Liga over Barcelona, Raja Nainggolan, like they have good strikers. They have João Pedro, who's the highest scoring Brazilian in the top five European leagues the last two seasons. Cagliari have a lot of really good players. And Torino also have that game in hand, which is important. So I think Benevento joining Parma. Parma's like the big casualty, right? Because of the new ownership and a lot of money spent in the club, the plans to refurbish the Tardini. So it's always unfortunate when you see a historic club going down in Serie B.
I do think that Parma will bounce back up. I do think, like you said, they have good management if they trust Aversa and they can get back to actually defending well. And, you know, I mean, that's what they did so well, defending well and counterattacking. And now it's like they're conceding four goals left, right and center. So it's a little bit worrying. I think there's just been too many changes for them that they didn't cope with. Cagliari, we talked about the fact that, you know, when Crotone made the change to me, it made no sense and we didn't understand Cosmi coming in. But Semplici is a fantastic coach. And we weren't finding out, we weren't seeing the beauty of what he could do until now, right? Three wins in a row for Cagliari, but fantastic wins. And like you mentioned, you know, you reeling off Nandez is one I would like to mention because like Lazzari, I don't think that they get enough compliments for just how outstanding they can be and their work rate more than anything. He was spectacular. And, you know, like, you know, winning over teams like Roma, having that mentality, showing that clear desire, knowing how to take advantage of mistakes from the opponent. I really cannot. I hope Semplici doesn't go down. I really don't. And I really think that Cagliari has enough. So I would like to see them there. Benevento, I agree with you. There's a part of me that just thinks, I mean, I've just talked about the fact that I'm a capitalist. So if I'm going to choose, obviously, there's nothing about them that makes me think they're fantastic tactically. Sometimes I'm like, okay, that makes sense. Sometimes I'm like, what is going on there? So for me, I agree with you. I do think it's going to be the three right now. Torino don't have Mandragora and Verdi for a while, you know, suspensions, but they have a lot going for them, and they're a team that I just would shudder to think that we could lose from Serie A. So I hope that that's never true.
Yeah, I think the other team that is at risk with the Benevento is actually the newly promoted one, Spezia. Even though they're a fraction ahead at the moment, they just, their form has dipped, and that's not a you know, I'm with you, Mina. I think Italiano's done good work this season, but they look like a team that's run out of steam a little bit here at the end of the season. And I think that what's going to keep them afloat is that Benevento have done so even more. I just want to, they're going to go down, but they're technically not down yet. I just want to say again, I'm obsessed with Crotone under Sergio Cosmi. I'm obsessed with Simi. I just think he's just wonderful. Well, he does not stop scoring since Cosmi got there.
12 goals in his last 9 matches, and potentially the highest scoring player ever to go down on a relegated side.
It's insane. I honestly think that we talked about how Inter are impressive, but not necessarily fun to watch at the moment. Crotone is like the mirror image. They're not impressive, but God, they're fun to watch at the moment. That's been one of the most fun teams to watch in Serie A over the last month. So Crotone technically still alive. But yes, I think they're gone. I think Parma are gone. And instinct, yes, it will be Benevento with them. I think if it isn't, I think it'll be Spezia, because Semplici has fixed Cagliari, who have abundant talent. But I think nevertheless, it's impressive when you're missing 9 Golan to rejig things to go with a really attacking lineup, you know, to basically throw all of your remaining attack-minded players onto the pitch against Roma and score. I know Roma conceding goals, but still score 3 goals in that game and play the way you did with that sort of courage was really impressive. And I think he's done a great job since he got there.
I do think that at one stage next week, perhaps we can go into Roma, because obviously they would have faced, you know, Manchester United.
Really, but hard to talk about them when they're playing the same. They play within a few hours of recording, basically.
And then
that's why we purposely took them away, and we'll know a lot more. Maybe Roma.
But that's what I mean. I just want to mention the fact that they're not thinking clearly right now. They're conceding goals left, right, and centre. Their attention seems to be entirely on the Europa League. That game against Cagliari showed you there's just no concentration going on at the moment. And yet, you know, it's a shame that they're out of the top 4 conversation. And I hope we can dedicate some time to them next week.
We will. Mina, your wish is Serie Awesome's command. So we will jot that down, and we will be sure to dedicate a Roma segment. And hopefully they do beat Manchester United, so we have more to talk about on Serie Awesome. We are always pulling for the Italian teams, no matter who they are in Europe, whether it's Europa League or Champions League. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed the show. We have a lot of things to get to in the next month, whether it's the top 4 race, the bottom 3 race. There's a lot going on. It is one of the most fun and exciting seasons we've had in Serie A, despite having no fans. So plenty to look forward to when the fans start streaming in, when it's safe to do so. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Matteo Bonetti, joined as always by Nikki Bandini and Mina Rizzucchi. Ciao for now.